Today's episode is brought to you by our company, Sales Schema. Sales Schema helps agencies and B2B service companies build a reliable business development system through tasteful and targeted outreach. To learn more about us and check out our latest video training, go to salesschema.com/takecharge. What we like to do, and this is special to us here at Sales Schema, is we almost never go in cold. Because here's the thing. At the top of the funnel, especially when you're dealing with something that is well understood, like marketing services and other B2B services, the issue really isn't differentiation. It's not the bells and whistles. It's not the features. It's not the benefits. It's not everything that you would put into marketing copy. It's actually trust. That's what we're up against, is lack of trust, skepticism. That's the barrier we have to get over in order to de-risk a conversation so that you can build a relationship.
Welcome to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Englander.
Today's episode is brought to you by our company, Sales Schema. Are you tired of relying on unpredictable referrals to grow your agency or B2B service company? Yes, Dan, I am. So maybe you hired a salesperson or a lead generation company and your efforts failed miserably. So here's the problem. When it comes to selling agency services and other consultative offers, cold outreach doesn't work. And that's because there's so much competition and noise. And the scarce resource is not differentiators, at least not with the prospects who don't know you yet. So what's the scarce resource? It's actually trust. And at Sales Schema, we've worked with over 100 agencies and B2B service companies since 2014 to help generate qualified meetings and keep the pipeline full so our clients can achieve their dreams. And I've put everything we've learned into my book, Relationship Sales at Scale. And to learn more and pick up the book, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/RSAS. Again, that's salesschema.com/RSAS. So today on the show, we've got something a little bit different for you, because I don't think we've done enough teaching and training on what we're actually up to here at Sales Schema. And we're very excited to release our new training, which is all about how to keep your agency or B2B service company's pipeline full using targeted outreach. So this is what we've been up to since 2014 here at Sales Schema. And it's been a while since we've sort of let anyone in on our tricks and sort of how the sausage is made. This is adapted from video. I think you'll probably get about 90% of the learning just fine with audio only. But if you want to see the visuals, you can click through to our site and click on the podcast page. But a few things you're going to learn by the end. You're going to understand the top three reasons agencies fail to get proactive about business development and remain stuck in this cobbler's children trap, and how you can avoid these obstacles no matter what you choose to do. You're going to understand the skill set that's necessary to generate at least 5 qualified appointments every week without spamming anyone. And the good news is you don't need a whole lot more than that, especially when we're talking about big ticket offers and a consultative sales process. You're going to understand, if you don't already, why cold outreach sucks and how you can be better and what you can do to break through the noise in skeptical markets. You're going to learn how to secure consistent opportunities through targeted referrals, commonality-based campaigns, and other approaches that leverage trust. And finally, you're going to learn how to implement a division of duties so you can maintain consistency and avoid falling back on old habits, even if your team is small. So before we get into the training, one housekeeping announcement is we are going to experiment with going from a show every week to a show every 2 weeks. We're going to be doing this at least through Q4. The reason behind that is we want to save some time, focus more on being deliberate about the guests we have on the show and not just having to feed the content beast every single week. And there's a lot of stuff we're working on behind the scenes here at Sales Schema. So this probably won't be forever. We're just going to give this a shot at least through Q4. But wanted to mention for you guys. So without further ado, let's get into the training. So welcome to the training, how to take charge of your agency's future revenue. Pretty bold title. It is basically going to be about how to build a reliable new business system through targeted outreach. So if you don't know me, my name is Dan Englander. I'm the CEO and founder of this company called Sales Schema. We've been in business since 2014. We've worked pretty much exclusively with agencies and B2B service companies to help them keep the pipeline full and grow so they can do usually one of three things: just kind of grow and expand, perhaps get acquired in the next few years, simply choose their clients instead of the other way around, do great and compelling work, go home on time. My background originally is in the agency space, first working on the account side back when you could just say, hey, we do social media and companies would give you all their monies. It was like circa 2010. Moved on to a split kind of hybrid sales, account management, client services role in the creative space, helped that company grow to seven figures and win probably like 20 something Fortune 500s. Tried every tactic under the sun to build scalable and repeatable new business in an agency context. Learned a lot from that. We did inbound, we did outbound, we did everything. Started Sales Schema in 2014 and have basically worked with, you know, more than 100 agencies at this point to usually reach and open doors with significant brands, primarily through targeted outreach. So we've learned a lot over the years. We've learned how this area has changed. We've learned how powerful it can be. So that's a little bit on our background. There's a few different things that we're up to. We do this in a done-for-you capacity for higher-level agencies. We also have a number of different training programs and other resources like this for agencies that want to build outbound as a viable channel in-house. So with that, I just want to talk a little bit about the power of one more call per day, one more qualified call per day, and just kind of go over the promise of and the straightforwardness of this channel of doing outreach, right? Because a lot of the times our clients are getting business in a reactive way, which I'll talk about more in a second. And I think a lot of the times there's this aversion and there's this idea that, oh, we've got to get on like hundreds of calls and like talk to a million people that aren't a good fit in order to make a channel like this work. And that really doesn't have to be the case. And while this isn't easy, it is simple. So to get into the numbers, this is kind of how it breaks down. So this is basically how you can close two more deals per month through targeted outreach. So if you're contacting around 300 people per week, that might sound like a lot, but that basically breaks down to like 50 per day. And you're getting a 1% to 2% meeting rate. So you're able to make a message that's compelling enough to get 1% to 2% of people to agree to talk to you. And then you're able to get 1 in 10 of those people to close with you. You're closing a deal basically once every 2 weeks. These rates are something to aspire to, but they're not crazy. They're relatively conservative. They're based on not just what we see with our better clients and with what we're doing for ourselves, but industry standards. 10% close rate on outbound is pretty typical. So I just want to go over this to show the napkin math and to show how powerful this can really be. With that in mind, this is not for everybody. You know, this is basically for agencies and B2B service companies, like I talked about. Ideally, you're going after quote unquote big ticket, right? So you're not doing like dentist's office for $1,000 or $2,000 a month or something like this. You're going for funded startups, mid-market, enterprise, Fortune 100. You're going after significant deal size. That's not to say that the methodology here won't work at all for going down market. It's still the same human wiring and whatnot. But our experience and the stuff we're going to go over is based on significant deal size, based on the sophisticatedness of this, the focus, the customization, and so on. So those are a few things that need to be in place for this to be a good fit. And I think if you're in that situation and you're like a lot of the hundreds of clients we've worked with over the years, there's a few things that hold agencies back in this situation. There's basically three big ones. The first is the feast and famine roller coaster. This can manifest and be caused by a number of different things. But one of the biggest ways this plays out is you are getting business from referrals. You might have marketing leaders who you get to know. They take you with them. But also it's a double-edged sword, right? Because then if you get attrition, you get some new decision maker coming in, it can affect your longevity with a particular client. Another part of this is having a big gorilla client, having too much revenue concentration in one place. The second part of that, tied to this, is that overall reliance on referrals and RFPs can do a few different things. For one, it can create kind of an inflated sense of your team's sales abilities. And we hear a lot of like, if we get them in a room, we close them, right? But the reality is most of the time, the agency is only used to people when they're at the far end of the buying cycle, right? When they're solution aware and they're not used to selling to the general population through a repeatable new business system, right? That's going to allow them to achieve their goals and everything like that. And then the third thing that holds people back is just kind of a culture of reactivity that's kind of caused by all of the above, right? So it's the idea that we need to wait for things to come to us. We don't have a right to contact our own clients, our own market, and everything like that. And I'm telling you things that you probably already know, and you probably see this in your agency. As a quick break, I wanted to let you know about our newest video training, How to Take Charge of Your Agency's Future Revenue. By the end of this training, you're going to learn how we get 2 to 5 qualified appointments every week using tasteful and highly targeted email outreach. That might not sound like a lot, but once you understand the outreach napkin math, you're going to learn how this can lead to massive scale for your agency or B2B service company. In addition to that, you're going to learn the 6 steps for successful outreach campaigns based on everything that we've learned from working with more than 100 agencies since 2014. You're going to get the complete agency outreach tech stack so you understand the right tools for getting the right results. And you're going to see agency to brand email examples and get inspiration from high converting campaigns. So to get this 30-minute training, all you need to do is go to saleschema.com/take charge. Again, that's saleschema.com/take charge. But the reason people stay stuck once they already know these things are a problem are another 3 reasons. The first is saying we don't have time. Hey, we've got this big client, we've got this big proposal we got to do, whatever. And saying you don't have time is another way of saying this problem is not important enough to solve. Right. And that problem is defined by having these sort of reactive, fly by the seat of your pants sales processes as opposed to something that's repeatable. So that's the first thing. The second thing that causes them to stay stuck is the idea of getting all your ducks in a row. We hear a lot of this as in we've been working with whatever growth stage tech startups. So we've been working with CPG brands for 10 years, but we were not ready to contact them yet because we've got to build sales collateral and we've got to redo our site. We've got to hire this person and that person and all these sorts of things that stop the train from even starting off down the tracks, right? So that's the second thing. And the third thing is just inconsistency. We hear a lot of, yeah, we started to do this, then something got messed up, which is par for the course, you know, something got broken, we got busy, and then we stopped doing it again. So there's this kind of mindset that goes along with reactivity that's kind of like, hey, we're going to do sales as a hobby. We're going to do new business when we have time, which doesn't make any sense at all. Right. If you look at any significant business that has grown, if you look at the rest of the B2B world, consulting, tech, or whatever, that's not something that anybody really ever does. The mentality is like going to the gym or eating healthy. It's like, okay, just because you've made your weight target doesn't mean you just get to stop because then you're just going to slide back again. So the idea is, you know, this always has to be on. You're always prospecting. You're always teeing up future business. The false objections to that we tend to hear are like, well, you know, we don't want to overstretch our team. There's plenty of ways to deal with that problem. Yes, you can scale up if that's what you want for your business, but you can also have waiting lists. You can also raise your prices. You could also sell products that are more scalable. But the idea is you don't get to stop prospecting if you want to break out of this negative roller coaster of ups and downs. With that, there's a million different tactics that different gurus are saying you should do, right? But they all kind of break down under 4 big umbrellas. There's basically 4 things you can do to go outside of like reactive, unpredictable referrals and so on, right? There's cold outreach, there's warm outreach, there's content, and there's paid ads. And it's really not about this or that. It's kind of a this and that question. And it's a matter of kind of how you budget your time and resources. Our focus is going to be on outreach for reasons that I'll talk about in a second. So let's talk about outreach. And a lot of people, you know, if they're selling a particular channel to you, they will say, hey, it's the be all end all. It's a silver bullet. This is the best thing in the world. Everything has context. Everything has challenges and advantages, right? So with outbound, first I'll talk about the rub. The rub is it's not going to be like a referral, but the upside is you get full control over it. So you get to decide, hey, we want to work with these companies and these people, and you get to guide that, you know, and build a strategy around it. The second aspect of it is you get to contact the fat middle of your market, which is most of your market. If you think about your total addressable market, there's a small percentage of people actively searching for a solution. Now, if you're dealing with referrals, that's probably 80, 90% of the leads you're talking to, more or less. And if you only want to talk to that sort of lead, I'd recommend focusing only on those referrals. And there's ways you can expand that, which we'll talk about later, to be more targeted about getting referrals, or you can pay for search ads and, you know, look for the small percentage of people actively searching. On the other end, there are people that will never hire you either because they're happy with their current agency or whatever it might be. And then there's everybody else that has a problem that would talk to you if you approach them in the right way, right? So this is the power of outbound, is we get to reach these people sooner. And also, you know, yes, some of them might like content and there's ways you can incorporate content and demand generation and all that great stuff. But there's plenty of people, especially in the B2B space, that will just prefer to have a 30-minute conversation to get the door open, as opposed to this bill of goods we've been told, which is like everybody wants to go through hours of content before they talk to you. And the fact is, like, if you're a busy, you know, marketing decision maker in a company, there is definitely a world in which the right person, you know, who de-risks the conversation is going to be better, faster value than going through hours of internet content. So that's what this sort of approach is like. So let's talk about targeted outreach a little bit and how to make it effective. Maybe it's completely new to you, or maybe you've tried this in-house. Maybe you've hired a lead generation company and they've failed. Usually, maybe getting you leads that are not worth your time, or it's just been crickets and you haven't seen anything at all. So what we found is there's this kind of dichotomy where people tend to get it wrong. On one end, on the right end here, are people that are kind of like worried about doing outreach, don't really want to do this at scale, and they write custom love letters, right? They're like, okay, we want to identify these 10 people. We're going to make sure everything's perfect and we're going to like contact them. And one of a few things happen. Maybe it works and then your team gets busy, right? And a proposal comes up and then the sales as a hobby thing kind of falls apart. That's really common. Or it doesn't work for one of a million reasons, largely because scale does matter. We do need to get to a certain amount of activity. Like I talked about in the beginning, kind of getting up to that 300 a week level or more. That's just a benchmark. So nothing happens. So that's one end. That's the far end. On the more common end with people doing outbound, especially if you've hired a lead gen company, is it fails because of too much scale. Because most people are going in cold and selling way too hard. And there's a few issues with cold outreach like this. For one, there's so much skepticism and noise overall in the market that we have to be more sophisticated. More on that later. A lot of the times these cold outreach approaches are kind of one size fits all, right? So they're based on what might work for transactional products, for software, and for other things like that. And when you're dealing with complex consultative offers like agency services, what we found is it's just a different approach. And we'll get into that. And you have to be a little more sophisticated about it. And then the other issue is deliverability and potentially reputation damage, right? Because what we tend to see is this onslaught of advice that's like, you need 20 touch points to get a door open. But the problem is those are optimizing for metrics that are readily available at the expense of everything else. So yes, you're seeing the increase in meetings that maybe you're scraping up a few people at the bottom of the bucket when you contacted them with the 50th email in a month, but you're not seeing the fact that your deliverability is going to crap because Google and all the email providers are basically sending you right to the spam box. And all you're seeing is a low open rate. And you're like, huh, outbound used to work and it doesn't work anymore. Guess I'll move on to something else. That's not effective, right? And that's not going to work, especially if you're in this agency world. Your total addressable market is not tens and hundreds of thousands of companies, like as if you were selling to dentists. It might be a few thousand companies, right? So we've got to balance these two things. We got to find that scale, personalization, Goldilocks zone. So the answer is basically riding the line between the two. And that's what we have learned to do over the years, because we used to do a lot more cold outreach. And there's one story I tell a lot where we had one client that was perfectly positioned. They were niche. They were focused on technology. They were in the Bay Area. They'd worked with every big tech company you could ever find. And we tried every variation of cold outreach, like every channel. We did LinkedIn. We did some phone. And nothing was really working. We tried every message, you know, all these different variants. And then we moved on to what we've since rebranded as our own methodology as Relationship Sales at Scale, per the book behind me, which I published recently, where we basically said, okay, we're going to find everybody that used to work at one of their big clients. I'm making it up. Let's say it was Lenovo. And we're going to find everybody that went to other companies they want to talk to that used to work there. Let's say it was IBM, HP, whatever. And we sent everybody like a two-line email that said, hey, saw you used to work at Lenovo. They're one of our best clients. Hope everything's going well at HP. We should probably talk. Got dozens of appointments, you know, one or two of those translated into major six-figure business. They went on to eventually get acquired and so on. So this planted the seed of our methodology, and that's really what this is about. So even if you're not getting that sophisticated, it's about finding this fine line between cold and warm in a nutshell. If you thought about building outreach campaigns in the past, or you've worked with other companies that do this, most people get the process wrong. They overcomplicate it. Let's think about it in terms of building a house or baking a cake. I don't want to mix up my metaphors. Let's stick with the house one, right? So these are all considerations and questions you have to answer in order. If you get the quality wrong at any stage, everything below it and the whole campaign rather, can kind of fall apart. These are considerations that you need to think about. So the first is your ICP, your ideal client profile. Then it's the accounts. then this is getting into what we've found to work really effectively in our own methodology, which is based on commonalities. And if you don't want to find a commonality or you can't, it's another compelling reason to talk right now. We'll talk more about that in a second. Based on that, you're thinking about the specific prospects or people, then copy, and then automation. Now, the way most people do it is in almost reverse order. They're thinking about people, automation, copy first, and then breaking it down to all these other things. And it just creates a lot of confusion and cognitive dissonance. So let's kind of go through each one. So let's start with the foundation of the house, and that's ideal client profile or ICP. And you may know this like the back of your hand, in which case, great, this step is going to be easy for you. Or if this is hard for you, it's probably a sign that it's one you need to figure out first, and it's super important, right? The way that we're kind of thinking about ICPs is more on an account level. So you're thinking about the type of company as opposed to the type of person. We'll get to that later. Also, when you're thinking about building outreach campaigns, you don't want to spread yourself too thin. So you don't want to think about like a million different areas you can serve. You want to think about what's most viable based on a few different considerations. So where are you most positioned to help? Another way of thinking about this is where do you have the most experience? The happiest clients? What areas do you understand the best? Like what verticals do you know like the back of your hand? So if you're starting outbound fresh, it's better to think about this and to prioritize this than to think about some shiny object vertical based on some recent project you've had. So that's the most important thing, is to start there. But then you can probably build out a couple more. But even for our clients and for us, we're not really going beyond three active ICPs at any given time, because otherwise you're spreading yourself really thin in terms of the data management, the copy, the message, and everything else. So you're starting there. The next one is, all things being equal, you know, you can't focus on growth. What's a growing market? That's ideal. You know, you may be thinking about technology over newspapers, et cetera. And then another consideration is, what is going to be findable, right? So, and reachable in an outbound context. So for example, we do a lot of outreach into healthcare and banks, and it does work, but we have to be more careful because there's more technical barriers and firewalls and all that sort of thing. Versus if we're selling into tech startups, the meeting rates tend to be much higher because people are looking for ideas, they're smaller companies, they move faster, and so on and so forth. So all things being equal, findable, and I should put reachable as well, is another thing to think about in this context. At the end of the day, don't overthink this. It's better to get started with your best guess at it and then go on from there. So that's the foundation of the house, which is going to inform the next thing here, which are the accounts that you're looking to reach. So ideally, you know, you're starting with at least 1,000, you're not automating it yet, and it's worth you or some other higher level person in your company spending time on this in the beginning, and then later you can get this off your plate with the help of list builders and VAs and so on. And you might be looking at like 1 to 3 contacts per account, that'll come later. But let's just look at an example of this and why it's important to kind of get the QC right so that each foundation of the house is sound. So the foundation of the house, let's say we're looking at direct-to-consumer e-commerce. This is a very common market segment for a lot of our clients. This is data as it comes from Apollo. We also might use LinkedIn Sales Nav and other stuff that I'll talk about later. But the way that companies are thinking about themselves and the way that individuals within those companies are thinking about themselves is different than the way you might think about them from the outside looking in, right? So if you work with D2C e-commerce, they might be thinking of themselves as apparel, fashion, retail, consumer goods. It can be a mix, right? So the best thing to do to figure out how people are sort of classifying themselves is bring up a bunch of tabs for your best clients. And those tabs rather should be the LinkedIn company profiles, right? So you'd have like 5-10 of them open. So you can really see, okay, how are these people being filed, right? And then from there, you can identify what these companies look like and build very specific lists so that like 80, 90, or even 100% of your list is good. Quality in, quality out, garbage in, garbage out. So to summarize, we're going ABM, or account-based marketing, account-based sales. We want to get the accounts right. And then what we're going to do is find individuals from that account foundation that are going to be a fit. So that's really important. You're getting your accounts right. From there, what we like to do, and this is special to us here at Sales Schema, is we almost never go in cold. Because here's the thing. At the top of the funnel, especially when you're dealing with something that is well understood, like marketing services and other B2B services, the issue really isn't differentiation. It's not the bells and whistles. It's not the features. It's not the benefits. It's not everything that you would put into marketing copy. It's actually trust, That's what we're up against, is lack of trust, skepticism. That's the barrier we have to get over in order to de-risk a conversation so that you can build a relationship. And the fact is, we all know that, you know, there's no situation where you're going to email somebody and they're going to be like, great, here's $100,000, let's get to work. It's going to take you climbing that trust ladder, right? So we've got to get on the first rung, or get over the first rung of that ladder. And there's a number of different ways to do this, but commonalities are a really good one because they allow you to, again, find that Goldilocks zone between personalization and scale. Let me do a little sidebar real quick. There's a lot of talk about personalization, and I've heard it described any number of ways, from including somebody's first name to like making AI deepfake videos and all this stuff. There's going to be an AI arms race coming up of basically personalization, which is like regurgitating information about somebody back at them. And sometimes it's cute and sometimes it can be effective, but it doesn't really work long term because anybody can do it and it seems kind of cheesy. The thing that we think is scarce in our experience is the thing that you have in common with your prospect, because not everyone has that. So our whole thing with commonalities is selling where you have an unfair advantage, right? And we're going to talk more about how you can implement that in a second. But here are a few examples of this. And this is not exhaustive. There's probably a couple dozen different strategies or tactics we've used along the lines of commonalities. But the first one, and one that's very tried and true, is location, right? So it's like, yes, you could go after any CMO that is working for cybersecurity companies, that because that fits your vertical. And you have all these great case studies. You could do that, or you could start with the ones that are in Denver, right where you're based. Or you could start with the ones that are in Vegas because you're going there next month for a conference and it would be great to meet beforehand. Or you have another partner that is in Boston and that person is active and you're going to be visiting that person in a little while. So if you were to say, hey, I'm going to be in Boston next month, or my partner's there, or I have a conference here, or I'm from this hometown, or I'm originally from this country, there's just going to be more of a chance of that person saying, wow, this person actually wrote me a custom email and I'm going to be more likely to talk to them, and basically de-risk that call, right? Build that trust and that kinship. So that's not the only way, but that's a common campaign for us. Another one is relevant accounts. So like I talked about earlier, finding people that used to work at accounts that are relevant to you and then have now gone on to another account. It's the idea that you're just sort of finding that the circles of influence, that trust, that kinship. In that book, Relationship Sales at Scale, that I wrote, I write a lot about this idea of the work of Robin Dunbar, who is the sociologist who made the point that we can maintain these circles of influence, right? Where we might have five or something very close family, people we confide in, another circle of close friends at 15, and it goes out by triples, basically. And then he gets this idea of Dunbar's number, which is the amount of first names or the amount of faces that we can maintain in our life. And it's about 150. And we don't know this for sure. We haven't done all the exhaustive sociological research. But our hypothesis from doing lots of email outreach is that there's another circle, which are the people that don't know you or that you don't know each other, but they would be willing to talk to you if you present them with the right commonality or something that you have in common. And that's what we're trying to do. And that can be in the thousands, that number. So our whole thing is, why not start there? Why not start where you have an unfair advantage, as opposed to just going in cold all the time? More examples of this, events and trade shows I talked about, you know, and then targeted referrals are another big one, which I want to talk about right now. So this is something we do a lot of here at Sales Schema, and let's do a little sidebar on referrals, right? Everybody says we get our best business from referrals. People come in with the most trust, and that's right. There's no better source of business than referral, right? Because it's quadratic. It can keep expanding without you having to do any other work. And the problem is, people handle referrals in a very sit on their hands reactive way. That's the most common way. The way that's a little bit better, but still not good enough, is people network, right? They say, hey, do you know anyone? And a little bit better than that is, they might say, hey, do you know anybody in the specific niche, specific title, et cetera. Now, that's all something people do. But the problem with that is, you really kind of underestimate the cognitive load and the work that goes into having somebody help you. And that's assuming they even want to help you. And let's say they do want to help you. They've now got to think about everybody that they know in their whole Rolodex. And they have to understand your service enough to know who would be a fit, to describe what you do, to recommend you, to do all of these things. And it's just a ton of work. So the good news is, because of all the data that's out there, it is possible to do referrals in a very targeted, deliberate way that is direct and honest and essentially batches them up at relative scale and makes it easy for people to help you and to actually make those introductions. So you may not be able to do all this from this presentation right now, but you can approximate it. And this is what we do at Sales Scheme, where we go step one, we build the foundation of the house, which is that total account list, all the ICPs involved in it. From there, what we're doing is we go to our clients and we say, okay, export a list of your first degree connections. And what we're going to do is we're going to map the number of ways in everybody you know has into those specific accounts and titles that you want to reach. Now, the first objection that we hear is, hey, Dan, or hey, Sales Schema, I don't know everybody I'm connected with. I have plenty of fake connections and whatever. We've ran automated this and that. And that's totally part of this. And that's the same for me. It's the same for everybody. And there's a couple of things there. For one, of course, you know, we're going to be able to prioritize the people you do know. But even the people you don't know, if you find out there's somebody that you're connected with that has dozen connections, you know, into accounts and titles that you want to reach that you've looked at, then that's maybe somebody worth building a relationship with. And that becomes pretty straightforward to hit that person up and say, hey, we've been connected for a while, do a lot of work in your space. We should probably talk and see how we can help each other, right? So from there, we're able to map the number of connections. We figure out, okay, you know, we can rank them. And then the last step is hitting up those people and saying, hey, I saw you know some people I'm hoping to reach. Can I run some of the names by you? Or can we hop on a networking call? And this can be extremely effective because you're getting in with that level of trust. So these are all ideas and things you can throw around for not just going in cold, but finding those people who actually have commonalities with you, whether it's existing relationships, referrals, locations, and there's plenty more from there. Again, the next stage of the house is the prospects, the actual people, and the next consideration. I get that these things are tied together. So this might sound like a lot to juggle, but keep in mind the numbers here. We want to be able to successfully deliver messages to 300 people per week. And if we're getting 1-2% of them to agree to talk to us, we're getting about an appointment a day or 3-6 per week, right? Which is great because it's not a ton of time. And if you get the quality right, these are going to be people that are really worth talking to. So once you're ready to contact your specific prospects and people, you've kind of landed on these commonalities. I think what we tend to see is there's lots of hand-wringing and lots of indecision. Who decides? Like sometimes we talk to this title, sometimes we talk to that one. If you were selling into big companies, there's a lot of, hey, sometimes procurement gets us in. Sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. And the fact is, and this is especially true for larger organizations, you don't really ever know. And even if you do know, things are dynamic and they change and there's politics and there's all this stuff. So the right thing to do is to not overthink it. Once you've built the foundation of the house, right, accounts, then commonality, so you can find a compelling way in and you're selecting people based on that thing they share with you on a data level, then you want to think about, like I said, right organization, right department. And sometimes we have clients that when you're selling into a smaller company, you can treat that as optional. It doesn't even have to be the right department and a senior enough person, right? You probably don't want to talk to an intern that's there for 3 months. You want to make sure that they're at least a certain level to be able to help you. So all things being equal, broader is better because the worst case scenario is you get a lot of market intelligence into how the company decides by getting somebody to agree to talk to you. So if you just want to talk to the highest level person, for one, it's going to be harder to get that call. They may not take it with you. And if you don't have anything in common with that person, then it's unlikely to work anyway. If you don't have a good commonality or why now. So those are a few things to keep in mind when it comes to selecting prospects. Now, let's talk about copy. The goal with copy, and this is the most common sort of response we get for clients, both for ourselves and for prospects, is something along these lines. This was a major marketing decision maker at Philips that we got for a client a while back. Darn this Canadian connection thing. I never responded on unsolicited requests like this, but your hook got me. I'd be happy to connect and chat. I'm also trying to build connections for Philips in the agency space. My schedule is very stacked over the next couple of weeks, but how about 30 minutes sometime in October? So variations on this response are very common. We always hear, I never respond to unsolicited outreach, but this got me. Or I never respond to this sort of thing, but there was something different about your email. And that's how we make decisions. We don't always know why we decide to do certain things. But what we found is that there's certain guidelines and there's certain commonalities in effective campaigns that make for effective outreach and make people agree to speak to you, even if they're very busy, even if they're very skeptical. And we're going to talk about those things in a second. But first, I want to talk about how 99% of people get this wrong. This was some copy that a client in one of our training programs wrote that we had to give some feedback on here. 99% of the time when people do this, they are going way too salesy, right? They're doing what they do for clients and they're writing marketing copy. I'm not saying that that can't be useful, but context and the medium and the situation are very important. And the fact is we are in people's inboxes, right? So we have to be a little more sophisticated and we have to think about this a little bit differently. Now, all the marketing copy and all the differentiators, all the great stuff you're doing and all the selling, that has its time and place, but it's not at the very top of the funnel in an outbound context. It's further down the funnel. It's further into the journey, basically. So I'll read this. I might not drag us through the whole thing. We'll see how it goes. But you know, this is a client of ours in the training program. We're saying the subject line, elevate your Amazon success with our agency. Let's connect. Hello, Bonnie. I hope this email finds you well. My name is so-and-so. I'm the CEO of this company and Amazon agency. It's been on an incredible journey for over a decade. Though we haven't had the chance to meet yet, I wanted to reach out with excitement and confidence, knowing that our expertise could be the game changer your brand needs. For humble beginnings in this area, we flourished into a family of 60 dedicated professionals, empowering food and beverage companies like yours to thrive on Amazon while expanding their sales across various platforms. As a fractional employee, we take pride in addressing every challenge your brand encounters, leaving no stone unturned in our quest for your success, including the critical aspect of branding. This past year has brought significant changes in the e-commerce space. We've been closely listened to business owners' concerns and applications throughout. Now I'd like to learn more about your unique goals and explore how our passions and interests align perfectly. Would you be available for a brief introductory call within the next few business days? I promise it'll be an insightful discussion tailored specifically to your brand's needs and aspirations. Look forward to connecting with you soon. Warm regards. So I don't want to beat up this company too much. They're very successful and talented in what they do, but this is what most outreach looks like. If you look at your spam box, if you look at the way that we see clients rewriting emails that we recommend, it always goes towards this. There's a few issues. For one, it's mostly focused on you. It's focused on the salesperson, the company, not the recipient. Also, this look is something that you would write to somebody you don't know. It's not something you would write to somebody you do know. If this was a friend, if this was an acquaintance, if this was somebody you met at a cocktail party or a networking event or a trade show, and you had a conversation with them, would you send them this email? And the answer is no, or I really, really hope not, right? Because it's not personal. So with that in mind, here are some guidelines. Here's kind of how we've been able to get to that just for me effect that makes calls happen. The first element is trust and kinship, like I talked about. Commonalities are one way to do this. They're not the only way. This could be based on something else, right? That really ties you in with the person that you're reaching out to. And again, the qualifier there is, would you send this to somebody you've actually met, somebody you've had a conversation with, right? And really think about that. Read it out loud. We always recommend that, like I just did. Read every email out loud before you send it. Another thing is deep understanding, right? Can you talk the talk and walk the walk? This is almost like fractal and microscopic. All the little things that you say, the terms of art, the style, right? The culture, like, if you are a cybersecurity company selling to finance bros in New York, those guys like two-line emails, right? It's a different culture than if you were selling to HR professionals and large CPG brands, maybe. The words you're using, all those different things are very important. Another aspect of this is show, don't tell, right? So you need to talk about what you've done and why you're competent. But usually the way we see people do get this wrong is it looks like marketing copy. They're saying, we've gotten X percent ROI for Y company in this many years. This is where there's some nuance, right? And there's not one way to do it, but subtlety is good. And you want to make sure it's falsifiable or an argument. You want to look like say something where if somebody reads it, they're like, okay, I can't argue that they did that, right? And we'll talk about an example and I'll actually go through a successful copy in a second so you know what I'm talking about. But if you say, hey, we've gotten 50% better ROAS in 1 month, that could be true. Or somebody could just be like, I don't understand this. Or they could say rather, okay, but maybe it was under this or that situation. There's just shades of gray, but big, bold, like this is real, we've done this, is really important. And even better, if you're tying this thing back to the deep understanding. So a lot of the times this means verbs over adjectives. Most of the emails we write have very few adjectives. Unlike this, this is all superlatives, right? Perfectly and so on. Excitement, confidence. I guess those aren't adjectives, but you understand what I mean. Timeliness. Why should we talk now? This could mean things that you're doing. Yes, it could mean actual events or content or webinars, or you're going to be in a town. That those are the most obvious glaring examples. There's other ideas that are more subtle that indicate, hey, I wanted to talk to you now. This is organic and now's the time. Another thing, and this is more subtle, but just a pattern interrupt. Does this seem different? Does it look like spam visually? And I think this is something that doesn't get talked about enough, but the way the email looks before anybody even starts reading it factors into whether or not people will even read it, much less talk to you. So the shape of the email, does this look like, again, something you would send organically or receive organically, or does it look like spam? And the good way to avoid this is to go into your spam box and just make sure, then just write something that's counter to all that, right? And then the last element of this is, does it de-risk the conversation, right? So looking organic, I already talked about. Another part of this is offering a third path to people. Because when I say, hey, there's no situation in which you're going to email somebody and they're going to give you $100,000, everybody nods their head and agrees. But very few people walk the walk with that, right? And what the email does and what this email does is, because of all the marketing copy, it's basically saying, hey, there's this binary you have. You can either agree to enter my sales process and entertain signing up. And that implies that, you know, you have to be in that buying mode of looking for an Amazon agency right then. Or the other option is you can just ignore me or tell me to go away. What we need to do is offer a third path, which is a value through a conversation, de-risking that conversation. So standalone conversational value. That's what we need to do. So let's look at this in motion. This is a client of ours that's been very successful with this approach, you know, using commonalities and finding the right way in. They are an integrated agency in the startup space. They've probably gotten a couple dozen meetings in about a month, month and a half or so. And these are all qualified into specific titles of companies that they want to reach. So let's go from the top here. First, we're saying, you know, first name is in the recipient's first name and the sender's first name intro. Now, I've labeled this a little bit as a pattern interrupt because it doesn't look like marketing copy. We're saying the sort of subject line you would put with somebody you actually met at a cocktail party event, etc. Next, we're saying first name. We're not saying hi or hey. We're keeping this direct, which is a little bit different, and that I think works well. Hope this now day of week finds you well, as in hope this Tuesday finds you well. I wanted to connect because I saw we know a couple of the same people if LinkedIn is accurate, big if, and we're both in the Chicago area. I'm based on the north side, and like everyone else, I'm about ready for winter to be over. So again, you could go in cold, you could contact just about anybody, but why not start with the people that are already likely to talk to you based on something you have in common? It can get much more sophisticated and fancy, but in this case, we leaned into a local approach, i.e. the Venn diagram of right decision makers in those areas that happen to be close to our client. Beyond that, I wanted to explore a potential partnership or at least be a resource. This is the third path, right? This is giving people another option instead of just ignoring us or telling us to go away or having them enter a sales process. We're basically de-risking a call in this situation. I'm the CEO at this particular company, and we're an agency that helps B2C SaaS startups, perhaps like company, grow through integrated marketing. In the past year, we partnered with client A, B, and C, but I've worked in SaaS for years, even taking this big name public 10 years ago. So this is going back to the show don't tell principle, the idea of saying things that are falsifiable, that, you know, people can't poke at. Basically, like, these are claims that are real, and it's kind of walking the walk and talking the talk, showing that, you know, you actually do what you say. And ideally, people are usually going to be going to the website and then seeing, wow, these things are true, which is going back to an earlier thing we talked about, which is that you want to focus on those areas where you're strong as the first starting place. Next paragraph, we're saying, I'm not sure if there's an immediate partnership opportunity, but I was hoping to connect and share an idea. This is a couple different things. For one, third path principle. Other principles, timeliness. Timeliness doesn't have to be like an exploding offer or something dramatic. It could be that I have an idea. And what's implicit in that is that your idea is not going to be around forever. It may not be exclusive. So it's worth talking now. It does help move things along. Would you be open to a casual chat in the upcoming week? Warm regards, and then the sender's name, which is a bit of a pattern interrupt as well, because it's a little bit more old school and classy. Again, part art, part science. You want this to fit your voice. It absolutely should. So you don't have to write everything like this, but getting your personality into it a little bit, making it seem like it's human, is going to cut against the usual blur of spam that's in most people's inboxes. And this has converted very well for our client. The next part of the house up on the roof is automation, right? So everybody wants to start here and shortcut the other steps, and then it doesn't work because everybody wants to over automate everything. So the thing to do is to get stuff working and to focus on front loading the work as opposed to backloading it. For cold outreach companies and people that really focus on, you know, doing a lot of the cold outreach guru sphere, there's so much stuff about creating this really complex funnel that involves all these different touch points and LinkedIn, email, and phone. Because how many times have you heard people don't even respond to the 20th message? Yes, persistence matters, and there's a place in which it does. But what we find is that when you're dealing with a skeptical market, if somebody hasn't replied, you know, after the first couple of touch points, the chances that they're going to reply on the third, fourth, fifth just reduce themselves dramatically. So yes, maybe you'll scrape up a few more, but again, you're not seeing everybody that's clicking that manual spam button and then deciding not to talk to you. So what we want to do is focus on front loading the work. If you focus more of the work on identifying the right companies, people that share commonalities, prospects, copy in terms of that initial message, then you're going to get a lot better results than if you just forget about all the building blocks of the house and focus on just trying to automate things out of the gate. All that said, here is the tech stack that we use, and we're very agile with this. And here's how to kind of think about this. So there's a lot of different data sources you can draw from. If you're in this B2B world of ours, Apollo can solve a lot of those problems now. That's usually what we go to for data, in addition to LinkedIn Sales Navigator. If you're in certain niche areas, like let's say you're in tech startups, there may be a way that you want to use Crunchbase. If you're in the Amazon space, there's Helium 10. And then there's hundreds, if not thousands, of other data sources you can use to inform your campaigns. Now, often this data exists on the account level. So maybe you can identify an account where they might be in market, or they fit XYZ parameter, or they're doing, you know, 50,000 a month on Amazon or whatever it might be. You're using that to build your account list. From there, you can move things right into sales engagement. Our tool of choice right now is Apollo. Apollo is also a data platform. And for maybe 70, 80% of cases, you can do a lot of this stuff just in Apollo. So we're setting up campaigns there. In addition, you know, if you add in a LinkedIn sales engagement touchpoint, you can be using that to contact people on LinkedIn. You're engaging your market. Now, once somebody replies, then they are leaving sales engagement land and either going into your CRM, or if they reply negatively, then you're not necessarily contacting them again anytime soon anyway. So once you get a positive response, then they go into your CRM of choice, whether that's a HubSpot or a Pipedrive or whatever it might be. And then this is where you are engaging your active opportunities and so on and so forth. So this is kind of the rough overview of the tech stack. Now, let's talk about automation a little bit. Here's how we like to think about it. Again, we don't want to hit people over the head too much because there's diminishing returns and it's going to hurt your deliverability. So we're sending that initial message, much like the one I talked about in the slide earlier. Maybe about a week later, 5 to 7 days later, we're sending a casual check back over automated email saying, hey, wanted to see if this reached you. From there, if we don't hear anything back, we're not sending another 5 messages for the reasons I talked about. But if somebody opens, and we know they opened, then maybe 30 days later, we're re-engaging them. And this is where we might re-engage them with a different call to action. We might ask them a question. We might send them content. We might be like doing something on LinkedIn. But what's cool about this is the open rates are very high because we have proof of life. We know that they opened. And we're not just beating our heads against the wall, sending to somebody that where the message might have gone to spam. It's a much more organic sort of approach, right? Because if you weren't automated, we want this to feel like you actually sat down and wrote a custom email. That's the idea. And if they do respond positively, then they go onto the calendar down here. And there's ways you can get much more fancy with this. You can experiment. There's lots of things you can do. But the issue, especially in a boutique agency, is time and resources, right? And automation and doing all this stuff. There's this idea that, oh, the robots are just going to handle it all. But the fact is your market is not unlimited. It's something you need to keep your finger on the pulse of. So it's going to take time and attention. So our whole thing is get it right in the beginning. You know, less is more. So that's kind of the idea. From there, I think there's a lot of questions about who handles this. And I think that's often like a, you know, big consideration is who's actually doing the work. Like we put so much focus on the what, but the who is probably more important, right? So this is the traditional sales pod. This is made popular by many, you know, by people in the sales space a while back. And the idea is that you would have sort of lists and data and stuff informing a BDR, or junior level salesperson. That person would be the face of the campaign. They go out, they dial for dollars, they send a lot of emails, they get people to agree to talk to them, and then they would tee up meetings for a closer. Now, I'm not saying this never works, but the issue is if you're selling complex services, you know, in the tens or hundreds or millions of dollars a year, and you're talking to a skeptical decision maker, let's say it's a VP, director, C-level, et cetera, they're not going to get a lot of value on that standalone call from a junior level salesperson, right? And they're going to see right through that immediately. Also, this junior level salesperson probably has less of a Rolodex. They have less commonalities with this person that is hard to reach, right? So our whole thing is, we want to help you sell with an unfair advantage. We want to help you identify the people that are already likely to talk to you and then de-risk calls with that person. So here's a way to rethink about who does what. Instead of having a BDR, you have the sales face, quote unquote, face of the campaign, the person from whom the emails are coming. Now, this person does have to show up to those calls. Otherwise, it feels like a bait and switch a little bit. Like, hey, we have this thing in common, but can you talk to this other person on our team? We have experimented with that, and sometimes it can work by doing the baton pass, but it works much better when that person is getting on the calls. Depending on your situation, this doesn't have to be you, or it doesn't necessarily even have to be an owner, but you want it to be somebody that's senior enough that the person you're reaching out to would want to talk to them, right? Because 9 times out of 10, they're going to go to that person's LinkedIn profile. In addition to that, and if you're in a small company or your sales team of one, you might have to do all these things, right? And wear multiple hats, but at least you can figure out how to divide up your time so you don't go crazy, right? So the other role here is strategy. What does that mean? Strategy is one of these words that gets overused a lot. This is figuring out the ICP, like we talked about, figuring out those high-level questions. Probably writing the email copy is going to fall under the strategy seat. At least it does when we're doing this for clients and so on from there. And then the other role is list builder. So you guys are all kind of working in conjunction, even if, you know, one person's inhabiting multiple roles. In the beginning, the strategy person, you know, the first few weeks of doing this and the list builder should be one and the same. And that's because there's all those little idiosyncrasies with accounts and you want to understand your market. You want to have your finger on the pulse so that you can properly delegate this to a list builder. So for example, like customizing lists, if you want to reach, you know, a company that's like the Acme LLC, you want to put that name in email, this list builder is going to need to know how to enrich that data to make it Acme so that the email looks organic. They're going to have some cultural and market understanding in order to build these lists. If you're going after cybersecurity companies, somebody's going to have enough intelligence to know, okay, this is a cybersecurity company, but this is actually some other technology. So this is teachable, but it's going to take you doing it enough and understanding the process so that you can create an SOP so that a list builder, whether that's a virtual assistant you hire on Upwork or whatever, can go and do this sort of work. But once you have these building blocks in place, then the idea is you're building campaigns at basically a weekly cadence. So you're thinking about the next week's campaigns, contacting, you know, as few as 300 people per week. It can obviously go much higher. But if you think about an attainable goal of 300, then you're getting stuff out the door and you're doing this in a personalized way. And if you can get up to 1-2% per week, you're getting 5 meetings a week. Work on that sales process, and all of a sudden, you're closing 2 deals a month. So just to summarize real quick, and I really hope this presentation has been helpful. This is the foundation. Start with your ICP, then accounts, commonalities, why now, prospects, copy, and then think about automation. And I think the other thing I want to leave you with is basically the way to get started is to think about your inputs, right? Like get off and running with something. If you're contacting just a few hundred people per week, and doing this the right way, you're going to see meetings start to happen. And I think outbound could be a very effective part of your growth strategy. So anyway, hope this has been helpful. If you are an agency or a B2B service company above 500K in revenue, we'd love to talk to you. There's a lot of stuff we're up to help out. We have done for you programs. We have training programs to help basically make this happen a lot faster and easier and help our clients ramp up to getting at least 5 meetings a week within 180 days or much less than that. So if you'd like to learn more or have a casual conversation with us to see how we can help, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/consultation to book instantly with our team. Thanks again. Thanks for listening to this episode. Again, today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema. Sales Schema helps agencies and B2B service companies build a reliable business development system through tasteful and targeted outreach. To learn more about us and check out our latest video training, again, you can go to salesschema.com/take charge. Again, that's salesschema.com/take charge.